broadcasting from Littlehampton, UK. This is the Man Up Podcast. Loading in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Well, it's a big welcome from me, Steve Legg, to the first ever Man Up Sorted Magazine podcast.
Very excited, Steve.
You look it. I think we should have some applause and whooping.
Please, sit down. No. Oh, get off. I'm only a man. Come on.
Stop shouting bravo. Just clap. Tony, it's lovely to be here with you. We're in sunny Bournemouth recording this first ever.
Do you know, that's one of the things I like about this podcast is that I feel, you know, obviously I'm a man from the north. I'm from Preston, live in Manchester. You're from down this way, Littlehampton.
I actually come from Bournemouth. This is my old stomping ground.
This is
Bournemouth.
Yeah,
it brings back lots of memories.
So would you say Steve Legg is a part of Bournemouth or Bournemouth's a part of Steve Legg? Is it kind of...
It's a key time for me growing up. Yeah. I mean, I became a Christian in Bournemouth. Kind of indirectly, which we'll talk about some other time, but great place. I think this is one of the places I could move back to. I love Littlehampton by the seaside.
Yeah.
And of course Bournemouth is by the seaside.
Yeah.
In the Royal Exeter Hotel, a lovely 3-star.
But you
were completely overwhelmed by the place.
You know, because you know when you think, oh, 3-star, you think it's going to be basic, but it's, I mean, it's lovely. I would personally, if I was given that star system, I'd give it 4.
I believe it could be a 4-star, but it hasn't got a swimming pool. It's got everything else.
Well, you know, I'm all about grace, Steve. So. the couches, it's like an IKEA showroom in here.
It's absolutely
isn't it?
Unbelievable, isn't it? And of course, Tommy in the breakfast thing, he bends over backwards
doesn't he? He's a yoga teacher in his spare time. But I tell you one of the things, I went on a little walk on the beach this morning, and I saw, and I thought this was just kind of a cliche, but I saw a guy with a metal detector going for it, like, and he was on there, and I was watching him for ages, and I thought that was quite an 80s thing, but he's still doing it.
We see it in Littlehampton all the time.
Really?
Low tide, out with the metal detector, headphones.
Because you think,
they're normally gentlemen with beards. Did
yes,
you know, so,
no,
did you
a beard? Beards, well, it could have been sandals, you know. But I kind of think, why beaches? Because surely you'd have more kind of success if you went to something like, I don't know, a tip or something like that. There's loads of metal around there.
Off all the time. You'd have tinnitus by the end of the day. You'd be thinking so much.
It'd be like a rave or something like that.
Only get onto tinnitus. We're rambling already, Tony. This is carnage.
The other thing about Bournemouth, which I thought was interesting, was there was a load of beachfront properties. You know those sheds, different coloured sheds along the front?
When you say sheds, you mean beach huts?
Well, beach. I mean, that's the thing.
You can't call them a shed.
Well, no, you can't. I'll tell you what's the difference between a beach hut and a shed is about 15 grand. That's what the difference is.
15, you're joking. You put, here, they're about £80,000.
Isn't that mental? One of those, my granddad, one of those on his allotment, he built it himself. The council gave it to him. They're having a laugh, mate. This is why I think, what one of the things I like about this podcast, it feels like a cultural exchange, really.
Well, it certainly is. We're all learning something. You are learning they're not sheds. They are beach huts. Would you like a beach hut? I'd love a beach hut.
I would if...
Well, it was silly for you. You live in Preston. How far's Preston from the seaside?
Yeah, we're talking... Blackpool's our nearest, but you couldn't really call that a beach. That's more of a sort of slurry, a wet slurry.
Apologies to our listener in Blackpool.
Sorry, Ted.
Do you know, I've always thought tremendous market for solar panels for beach huts.
Oh, yeah.
I said I live by the seaside. I always live by the seaside. And beach huts are fantastic, but there's no power.
There's not, is there?
There's no power. So you have your little Calagas stove in there. Yeah. No toilets or anything.
Yeah.
How about solar panels for beach huts?
That's a great idea.
It's a no-brainer, isn't it?
It is, because then that you could add another £5,000 on for that, couldn't you? Because the thing is, I think the beach hut is meant to be like a temporary little thing, isn't it?
It's a temporary structure, I think.
Yeah, I reckon that they'd be getting all kind of litigious on that and saying, oh, is that a dwelling then? Because when you're set up with your TV and your stove and your...
Of course, you're not allowed to sleep in there.
Oh, you're not? Is that against the rules?
You're not allowed to sleep in there. It's against the rules.
You're a bit of a maverick. What if you like just had a little nap? Would you think the feds might be on you at 3 o'clock in the afternoon?
I think you're allowed a nap.
Is that in law? Right, anything over 45 minutes and you're going to be hauled. Or is it when you have a nap? What if it's middle of the night, 3 a.m, but you're not asleep, but you're staying overnight, you're napping, but you keep setting your alarm every 45 minutes so that you don't go over the threshold. See, there's always a loophole, Steve.
You're listening to the Man Up Podcast with Steve Legg and Tony Vino.
Now, Tony, I'm very aware that there may be people out there who have no idea who we are.
Whoa.
I know it's hard to believe.
Well, we've got foreign listeners. This is this is to all those people out across in Bangalore.
From Littlehampton to the ends of the earth, this Sorted magazine, Man Up podcast. Well, my name's Steve Legg. I'm the editor of Sorted. I started it 7 years ago. Do all sorts of stuff. I've been called, well, I call myself comedy magician. If you don't find it funny, you know, it's just magic. Been doing that for 27 years, so that's wonderful. And kind of into creative communication and launched Sorted 7 years ago.
Do you find that the two worlds, obviously comedy magician, travelling around, doing the shows, and editor and founder of Sorted magazine, do you find those two worlds are totally separate? Like, you know, like you kind of do Sorted during the day, during the week, and then you're off at the weekend. Or do they kind of cross over?
Do you know, I think there's a lot of crossover. I'll be out on the road, I'll meet people, you chat to people, you find people with amazing stories. I remember when we started, people, you know, all the scoffers, you know what people are like when you start something new and different and unique. People said, oh, you will run out of ideas. You'll run out of stories. And you think, what a donut.
What a donut.
I mean, 7 billion people in the world.
It's like saying, I don't know, crikey, you live on Earth, you'll run out of air. You know, like the ideas, we tap into an infinite source. The ideas are totally generative, you know what I mean? That's the whole thing about poverty mindset, I think. I think people that have a poverty mindset, they think there's a certain size pie, and then there's different slices, and if someone else has a slice of that, then there's not...
That slice is gone.
It's gone. But actually, no, there's something about life that it's... We're creative people, aren't we? Once you get into the creative world, there's just more and more and more. It's incredible. It's more like what don't you write about? Exactly. What ideas don't you go with?
Well, totally. You know, we could be a daily. Well, I mean, have you ever heard of newspapers? Newspapers are daily. I said to this guy, have you ever heard of a newspaper? He's like, what a wally. And the newspapers rarely run out of stuff. I mean, sometimes, you know, it's a quiet news day. But we've seen various governments try to bury news, important stuff on the busy quiet news days.
Isn't it on the busy ones that they bury
I know, you're right.
Yeah, on the quiet ones.
I missed the concept altogether. Yeah. This is why I'm in magazines, not newspapers. You're right, Tony. One of the things I like about you, you know a lot about a lot of things.
Yeah.
But tell us about what you do. So we're rambling again. We're meant to be introducing ourselves.
Right. Okay, so we've got Steve Legg, myself, Tony Vino. So I am, first and foremost, a comedian. I travel around telling jokes and making people laugh, which obviously always elicits the question whenever I tell someone, they go, oh, go on, tell us a joke.
you're not really a joke teller, are you?
No, I it's more, it's made out like it's a stream of consciousness, but it's essentially observation, it's gags, it's but you kind of hide the jokes nowadays. I mean, I love jokes. One of my favourite comedians around was Jimmy Cricket, and he just does joke after joke after joke, and there's some great ones. He does this bit where he calls his mum on a telephone. He goes, hey mammy, what do you think of youth in Asia? And she says, I don't know, but the youth in Ireland, I don't like those. Beautiful.
It's clever.
But I think now people kind of want to feel like you're hiding the jokes, you know, in a narrative. So that's what I do. So I travel around doing comedy shows. So you kind of, it's a weird one. Like, I spend more time in the car than anything. So in a sense, my job's more like being a courier than a comedian, really, because that's what I do.
Well, if
I,
you could tie the two together, deliver a few parcels en route.
Do you know what? That would be a great idea. Just basically, right, I'm going down to you know, Cheltenham.
Needs a parcel
dropping
delivered.
Off a package. How did the gig go? Well, I never got there because I got arrested dropping off a package.
We're not talking about illegal packages. I mean, in sunbeds and, you know, parcels.
Oh, okay. All right, I get you. It's just how would I get a slice into the DHL market?
Well, I don't know.
I reckon they'd doorstep me. FedEx would have me. They'd have me profiled.
You'd be on a blacklist somewhere.
Somewhere on Interpol.
And of course, comedy is the new rock and roll, isn't it? Or has been. Who would have thought years ago, comedians playing Wembley Arena?
Isn't that incredible? Yeah, I mean, but back in the day, you had, remember, like the Mary Whitehouse experience, and Rob Newman, David Beale,
they were the first two
really to ever properly play the huge arenas. They did like an arena tour, and it was the link with TV. You know, you like, I think comedy's been like the saviour of certain theatres and art centres and places like that, because it's very cheap to put on. Mm. It's one guy and a microphone, yet, you know, people pay 30 quid a ticket, and then you times that by 20,000. I would see Michael McIntyre at the MEN Arena, 21,000 people in that night, and it's £30 a ticket. And he didn't even have a support act. I mean, I was
willing. It's literally a microphone, a table, and a bottle of water.
Yeah. Yeah, and you just think, wow, yeah. No, you know, as a business model, it works really well. And comedians that get on TV and have a regular presence, their money really is made through the live stuff. I was with a comedian the other day, a guy called Gary Delaney, brilliant guy. He's on Mock the Week.
Gary Delaney, funny guy.
Great, great comedian. And
it's all one liner stuff.
The one liner stuff. Yeah, and it was, and you know, it's his stuff on Mock the Week. He was saying that it's that which really makes sure that his tour works. You know, so
it's a TV appearance, TV Mock the Week. Never mind the Buzzcocks.
Yeah.
8 out of 10 cats,
and then the tour, and it's just a 1, 2, 3, boom, yeah, and it's that's it, and it's the, you know, there's plenty great comedians traveling around, but it's unless you get on TV, that's the thing that gets you the personal following that can then fill the theatres. Yeah,
it's so a fun life.
It's a fun life. I love doing comedy. I love traveling around. I love the adventure of it. I mean, you get off at the weekend doing gigs. It's like, there's nothing like the unknown. You know, I think what I like is, as a bloke, you know, I think there's something in all blokes about wanting adventure, you know, and wanting to wrestle. And like, I've got a little boy and he loves to have a wrestle. And for me, going to a gig at the weekend is, there's something about a wrestle. I don't know what's coming up. Don't know who's there.
I don't know how people can react. You ad-lib quite a bit. Boom, you pick on people. All very gentle, but you just...
There's a level of risk that it could all go wrong. And it has gone wrong in times past, you know what I mean? There's times when you've got history where it's gone, wow, that was tough, or I set a foot wrong, or the stuff I didn't know about, you know. Sometimes, I mean, I don't know if you've heard of this, but have you ever had it when someone in the audience, you start bantering with them and, you know, what's up with you in the goal? But, you know, my mum's just died, and you're like, great. And then that kills it.
I picked on a guy recently. I opened with this silly trick, and I need to get everyone involved wiggling their fingers.
Yeah.
And he was wearing a waistcoat. I noticed him out of the corner of my eye. And he was only doing it with one hand. And I said, come on, Pops. Let's get in both our hands. Do you know what? He only had one arm.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, he found that hilarious, and the rest of the audience did.
That could have gone too weird. There's a comedian that I know who... What he does, he gets someone up from the audience and he does this bit where they slip their arms through. So they get them to stand behind him and then slip their arms through. And you know that game where you get the person stood behind you does your arm actions. You speak and
put
they do your arm actions.
Yeah. Whatever, yeah.
And it's all a bit where they'll take chewing gum out of his mouth and get a banana out of his pocket. It was at Blackpool Magic Show.
You know, he's a magician.
Well, he's a comedy magic. Yeah. Comedy magician. But, and you know the big gig when there's thousands of people there.
It was in the Opera House. 3,500?
Yeah, 1,000 of people there. And then he got a woman up, he stood on stage, right? And then he pulled her arms through and she just had two stumps, no hands. And the whole audience were like, what's he doing? And he kind of fell apart with it. And the whole thing went really awkward. And people afterwards were saying, man, was she a plant? And he's like, what kind of... sick comedian, do you think I do that? I somehow do, you know, because he'd been going great up to that point, that I do that and then I bring someone up and then make everyone feel awkward and then end the show with
a tumbleweed moment. Wow. Isn't it?
The 60 Second Life Coach with Peter Horn.
At the time of recording this podcast, we are coming into the business end of the football season, and it's the decisive final phase when you sort the wheat from the chaff. Now, as a former resident of the town of Reading, I watched the progress of their football team with avid interest. I remember the excitement when they got promoted to the Premier League in spectacular fashion, and then the agonising disappointment when they were relegated back to the Championship very shortly afterwards. In the season when Reading got relegated again, I remember noticing something that Steve Coppell, the manager at the time, had said. I remember him saying, "If I knew what we were doing wrong, I'd have done something about it." Now, there was a kind of air of defeat in those words, as if he'd resigned himself to his team's fate. When it comes to achieving things in life, it's the unconscious mind that wins the day. Research has shown that it does vast amounts of work for us behind the scenes. All it needs is permission from the conscious mind to go in search of solutions. And without permission to at least consider an outcome as possible, it won't do anything. It won't be able to help you pursue your dreams. So if you're looking for success in an area of your life, a good habit to adopt is to give yourself permission to ask questions. Questions about how something could be possible. Often the secret is in finding one small step that you can take now. And when you do this, other possibilities can appear that would otherwise not have been apparent unless you'd taken the first step. I love the story of Walt Disney, whose work is known and appreciated by children the world over. Disney World in Florida opened in 1971. Sadly, Walt Disney died before the project came to fruition. And when his brother Roy was interviewed about this, the reporter commented on how unfortunate it was that Walt did not live to see it built. Roy gave an insightful reply, and he said, "Walt saw it first, and that's why you're seeing it now."
Jobs for the boys.
Wow, would you believe it? Jobs for the boys. We've hit the big time. We are with a living legend.
You're a living legend?
You are a living legend.
Well, thank you, Stevie.
Are you off to see the Queen soon?
Apparently I am. Well, everyone else seems to know about it, but I don't. So I'm waiting for the letter.
When and where that is.
Thank you very much.
Who are we talking to? Come on, tell us.
I'm Linvoy Primus.
Linvoy Primus, the legend.
The legend, as you say, but I am Linvoy Primus.
So, former Premiership footballer?
Yes, that's correct.
Was that a dream job?
It was to a degree. You know, as a kid, you want to play at the best. First of all, you just want to be a pro. That comes along, then you want to play at the highest level. And I got to achieve that late in my career. So, highlight, definite highlight for me.
So, a particular highlight of that highlight would be?
Probably beating Man United at Pompey, because you know they're one of the greatest teams in the world, and whenever big teams turn up, you know you want to do well, and we never beat the others, so Man United was the one to beat.
And what was the score?
Well, I think we beat them 1-0 and 2-1. They did beat us a couple of times, but they're erased from my memory. You don't remember those ones?
We've had the healing of the memories.
Amen, brother.
Now I remember one Christmas. I think it was Boxing Day. Watching Sky Sports.
Yep.
You didn't get one.
I know. That's a miracle.
Was
you know.
A brace. Yeah.
For me, anything's a brace. Even if I hit the post, that'd be a brace. But you know, it was to get one in was something. But two, and I used to go and watch West Ham as a kid. So a lot of my friends are West Ham fans. Did they abuse me afterwards or what?
Oh,
but I enjoyed it because we won the game as well. So yeah, really good, really special.
So someone who's been very successful financially, is money
Everything?
No,
you know, I had growing up and playing in the lower leagues, it was always a struggle. You know, there were times when my parents were buying our shopping for us. So, you know, there's a reality to it that there's a small percent of footballers who are paid very, very well, but the majority aren't and will have to work afterwards. So it came to me late. I wasn't flamboyant with what I had. I could buy nice things, but to be honest with you, those nice things didn't make me a better person. I was just able to enjoy those things. So it doesn't make you better. I'm still doing the thing I enjoyed, but, you know, it just allowed me to a little bit of freedom when I wanted to buy things or go on a nice holiday.
And you are a man of faith. Your faith is important to you.
Definitely.
Tell us a bit about that.
Well, I became a Christian in 2001. Before that, I was trying to fill my life with material things for happiness and peace. My wife was ill during just before we became Christians, and it just made me question what life was about, as well as other things. And, you know, as men, we don't discuss these things in public, but I went to a church and I heard a guy speak, and I thought to myself, that guy sounds like me, you know, but how does he know these things? And then he said he had a relationship with Jesus, and I said, rubbish, you know. But I started...
Words to that.
Yeah, so, you know, yeah, colourful words. But then it just started me on an investigation to find out who this Jesus was, and had a teammate who was a Christian, started asking him questions, and in the end, it sounded like I was missing the big picture. And after 6 weeks of that first visit to church, I became a Christian and started to follow Jesus.
And you never looked back?
Never looked back. And has it been easy? No. Has it been all highs? No. But the reality of it is that as challenges have come into my life, I've had and found different ways to cope with that, and that's reading the Bible, my family, friends of church, and, you know, just a different reality to life.
Living Boy, fantastic. We've loved featuring you in Sorted. You enjoy the magazine?
Yeah, mate. You know what? It's it's not a bad thing to say this, but it's got better and better.
Thank you.
You know, and you know what you're doing, and the guys you've got with you are doing an amazing job. And anybody listening to this and who hasn't had Sorted or looked at Sorted, please just look at it once, and I guarantee you'll have it in your house or you'll have it wherever you go every time.
Mate, you're a star. As you know, the podcast is very popular. People write in.
Yep.
We've had a few people ask for your Harry Redknapp impression to finish Jobs for the Boys. Go on.
Linvoy, don't pass it to him. He don't know what day of the week it is.
You're listening to the Man Up Podcast with Steve Legg and Tony Vino.
So, Tony, I was invited to this fella's house.
Yeah.
Nice guy, Robert. I was told this business guru.
Oh,
if you like,
no,
we don't like that word, do we? Christian guy.
Guru just, it's so, you know, right from that moment, I'm not listening to anything this person's saying.
You see, when I think guru, I think a turban, and do you think turbans? I think it's
man. I think it's that whole kind of, it was, you know, that term was kind of colonised in with the kind of like 90s self-help kind of guru.
Walking on hot coals.
All that kind of stuff. And it's, I just think, once someone terms themselves a guru, it's like someone that calls himself mad. I'm so mad, me. You're like, you're so far from being mad.
Yes.
I'm not actually listening. So yeah, guru, forget it. I think expert, let's just go back to expert.
Tony, it's a good point, well made. I was invited to have lunch with this expert. I drove
you'd
up
be
to
a social
house.
Guru.
Yes. I drove up to his house and we had his wife made a lovely Sunday lunch, crispy roast potatoes, all the trimmings.
Oh, nice.
So after lunch, he invites me into his lounge and he says, right, I'm going off for sleep.
Were you offended in any way that he'd invited you around?
I just thought it was really odd that this guy went to bed. And he said, you stay here. And he had a full-size snooker table in his front room. I've got to say, a lovely fella.
Mm, yeah.
I just thought it was odd.
Yeah, did he offer for you to come up and have a little cuddle?
Do you know what? I do love a nap in the afternoon.
I've really got... Since having kids, I never napped. I'm now in mid-30s, and now I love a nap.
It's mid-30s. Now, you see, people look at you and me, and they think we're brothers. I have a good 10 years on you. So mid-30s you started now?
Mid-30s. Yeah. Well, it's about 33. So my little boy's 5 now, and then I kind of would try and put him to sleep to bed. I'd have a nap. Now, though, my kids wake up quite a few times tonight, so really... Because people say, oh, the best thing to do to make sure you're not tired is have a nap. But basically, I have loads of naps, but all the way through the night. I never actually have a proper sleep now, because there's always someone waking up screaming in my house.
You see, I've heard the fact that half an hour in the afternoon is worth 2 hours in the evening.
Now, I've heard
that. But you go into a deep sleep cycle longer than a half hour, it messes you up, and you get really groggy. But how do you have just half an hour?
Yeah.
You'd think someone would have invented something. Because if I lay down at 2 o'clock, I know I'm not going to fall straight asleep. Mm-hmm. So you can't set your alarm for 2:30, but you only get 20 minutes. I guess 20 minutes is better than nothing.
Yeah, because I heard it was 15 minutes. Like, you can either have 8 hours of sleep is equivalent to 6 hours of sleep plus a 15-minute nap, but. There's a lot of, that's probably someone in a pub telling me that. I think that's as reliable as just a Google search.
So this guy Robert has a little nap. I'm playing snooker, full size snooker table, doing quite well. Had a break of 9.
Yeah.
Biggest break I've ever had, 9. Isn't that pathetic?
And he wasn't there to witness it. He's snoring upstairs.
No. So anyway, he comes down and his opening gambit is, I've been speaking to a friend of yours.
Oh, it's a bit sinister, that.
Yes. Who said you're a maverick. Your problem is you're a maverick. And I said, well, which friend?
Yeah.
Anyone tell me? So I'm figuring out, who does he know that I know?
Yeah.
But he used this word maverick. This is the interesting thing. He used this maverick term as something derogatory. Now, when you hear the word maverick...
He's not in the
A-team. That's Murdoch.
That's right? Murdoch. So, yeah.
Because I can see you thinking back to a bygone era.
Who's maverick? But, well, maverick is actually... It's a term... it's not a term of derision anymore. If you're kind of talking from a company perspective, well, hey, I'm not sure you could employ this guy. He's too much of a maverick. But just in general life, someone's a maverick. They're a bit adventurous. They're a bit fun. You think of like 80s cop shows. This the detective who's a bit of a maverick. The DC's always on his back. You think that's the guy I want to be. I don't want to be the guy who's saying he's a maverick. I want to be the maverick. Shaft and the like.
And I just think, I said, Robert, you couldn't give me a bigger compliment if you tried. You know, I want to be different. You know, I want to be, you know, if you think someone's going to be like this, yeah, I want to be the opposite.
Yeah.
There's something inside me. If I'm told in a church meeting to sit down, I want to stand up. If they say stand up, I want to sit down.
Totally.
Do you know what I mean? I don't know what it is about me. Is this a man thing? Is this just a me thing?
Well, no. I mean, very much, if you look at the arc of your life as well, you've been self-employed, you've been an entrepreneur, you've been, you know, you do stuff. And that, it takes mavericks. It takes people that don't just take orders from other people and from, you know, and kind of dictate their life according to what they think other people want them to do. A maverick is in other terms someone who's self-actualizing. You got to, in life, you got to make decisions and go for what you want. And if that makes you a maverick, then that's a great thing.
And of course, you know, Jesus, the ultimate maverick, surely.
Absolutely.
You know, the man who told religious people they were wrong.
Yeah.
Who spent time with hookers and prostitutes.
Tax collectors, people, you know, basically all the conventions and the rules that were entrenched but unquestioned, he turned them over, just like the tables in the temple. He just turned them over and caused a huge ruckus.
That's a good word. Ruckus.
to encapsulate the subversive life of our Saviour. What, a bit of a ruckus, yeah. We'd had a bit of a hoo-ha.
That should be in the Message Bible, shouldn't it? Ruckus. That's
shouldn't
a good
it?
Word.
Shouldn't it?
And of course, he treated women as equals.
Yeah.
You know, the massive faux pas back then was women were not treated as equals.
Yeah.
Society treated them very much as second rate, second class. And he treated women as equals. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
A real maverick in every shape and form.
There's a brilliant quote by a guy, by George Bernard Shaw, old Georgie B, as we like to know him. He goes, the reasonable man adapts himself to the world. The unreasonable one persists in trying to adapt the world to himself. Therefore, all progress depends on the unreasonable man. You could just replace unreasonable man with maverick there, couldn't you?
You could.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of Man Up.
Of Man Up.
Visit us online at sorted-magazine.com.